All right, lesson 18. And we need to turn to Genesis 25. And we're going to pick up at verse 19. So while someone's getting that to read, I'll just cover a little bit there. Abraham is getting close to dying. He's getting older in years, around 170, 75 years, somewhere in that range. And Abraham sends one of his servants to his family back in Haran and tells him to get a wife for Isaac. And so Isaac gets married, and then Abraham dies. And so then we'll pick up here in 19.
This is the account of the family line of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel the Aramean, from Paddan Aram, the sister of Laban the Aramean.
Okay, so here we are. He's 40 years old. That's how old he was when he got married. And if you, this is kind of where, remember Haran, where God told Abraham to leave there, yeah. Get away from his family. That's where he's at, and that's where his Isaac's wife is from Haran. And so we have that. And when you look at that, well, let's go back to that map. Picture. When you look at that, again, we're down here, somewhere down along this area because of, remember, they're in this location. So that's quite a ways for Isaac's wife to come. And you remember, Isaac's wife, Rebecca, had never seen him. And if you know the story, Abraham sends one of his servants to go get a wife for Isaac, and so that's how it was picked. I mean, can you imagine? Just traveling, you know, 800 miles or whatever to find a wife for your master's son, and you gotta pick this out. I mean, it's kind of an odd way. We don't look at that. Marriages aren't kind of like that today. I guess maybe in some countries they are, but
I wonder if there was some kind of a rules that they, series of questions that they would have to answer.
I don't know, but we know the servant trusted God because he prayed and he asked him. And he wanted to see how she responded. And God led him to Rebecca. But, it was kind of a very, they don't know. Was there kind of questions? What are they doing? What are they, all that. Would have been kind of neat to be a fly on the wall back then, I guess, and see that. So he goes there and you get to this next part where you have this whole thing that when Abraham died, the promise of the deliverer was passed on, right? And the promise of a great nation. Well, it's Isaac and Ishmael. Isaac, and that's it. And yet, Abraham was promised a great nation, and Abraham dies. So, he's 175 years old. That promise was still passed on to Isaac. And hence my question, if God's promised something to somebody, and it gets passed on to Isaac, or gets passed on to one of us, why did he have to pray for it and ask it? And this is where we learn about why did Isaac pray. 21 through 23.
Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife, because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah his wife conceived. But the children struggled together within her, and she said, "If all is well, why am I like this?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger."
So what does this tell us about God?
Going to happen before they're even born.
Uh-huh, yes. So this is one of the first times in the Bible that we have recorded where God talks about what's going to take place with these kids. And in Psalms, it talks about that before I before you were in your mother's womb, I knew you. And here you have this, God giving this example to him. So Isaac pleads with the Lord. That's where my thought process was going with that question. If God promised that, and they knew the promise, Isaac stood there on the mountain with his dad, where he was going to offer him a sacrifice, heard God's promise to him to provide, and that, hey, you're going to have a great nation. And he heard all this, and he would have been told this in account as he was passed on from generation to generation. Why would Isaac feel the need to plead to God for his wife to have children? You don't have to answer that, but just the thought, it's just a question that pops into my mind. I mean,
maybe carry on if he
had some forever. Yeah, I mean, of course we get frustrated sometimes when things don't happen according to our plan, you know.
Right.
And maybe that's what Isaac was doing. He says he pleaded with the Lord on his wife's behalf. Lord, have her have children. And but God already knew that she was going to have children. And that means nothing's hid from God. God knows all, right? Psalms. Someone grab Psalms 139, 13 through 16. I think this might be where it references that before you were born, I knew you.
For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance, but yet unformed. And in your book they all were written. The days fashioned for me, when as yet they were none of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So before he knew you, formed us. Had it. All right, Genesis 25 through, or Genesis 25, 24 through 26. I'm going to stay here on the map.
When her time came to give birth, there were indeed twins in her womb. The first one came out red-looking, covered with hair like a fur coat, and they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out grasping Esau's heel with his hand, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when they were born.
So they went 20 years. They were married at 40. He was married at 40. 20 years later, he now has two sons. And the description of them, well, the one who came out first, he had very red hair. His whole body had hair. Arms, you know, legs, head. He was covered in hair, kind of like a fur coat. So they named him Esau. The other one came out and he had his hold of his heel as he was being born. So had a grasp on his heel and they named him Jacob. 60 years old and the twins were born. This is where we're at on the timeline. We're here, we're Esau and Jacob. And you'll notice up there the name Israel to the right of Jacob's name. And that'll come later. Won't come in... Yes, I think we do cover that here in this lesson. But that's where we're at right now on the timeline. So we have this. So both of these two were very different. Okay? Verse 27 says this. As the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, and he loved the outdoors, or he was an outdoorsman. But Jacob had a quiet temperament, preferring to stay at home. Now, what does that tell you, based on Psalms 139 that we read, and in this verse? If you have children, you have multiple personalities, right? You have multiple, they have different, there's different things about them. I have four daughters, and they're all different. Every single one of them has a different personality, have a different outlook on life. They have a different, Elizabeth's very full of energy and just outgoing, just totally gets into it. And Michelle, she's not. She would be more of a quiet, timid, probably more like Jacob, and that personality. So, hence Catherine and Anna too. Anna's still kind of young, so it's kind of hard to know what she is going to end up being like. Is she going to be firecracker, or is she going to be more calm, collected? You know. But you have this. So you have all these two different aspects. And is there anything wrong with being a hunter or being timid and want to stay at home?
No,
there's nothing wrong with either of those, right? Okay, so let's read what 29 says. 29 through 34.
Once when Jacob was cooking a stew, Esau came in from the field exhausted. He said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stuff because I'm exhausted." That is why he was also named Edom. Jacob replied, "First tell me your birthright." "Look," said Esau, "I'm about to die. So what good is a birthright to me?" Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore to Jacob and sold his birthright to him. Then Jacob gave bread and lentil stew to Esau. He ate, drank, got up, and went away. So Esau despised his birthright.
Mm. Let's when you read those verses, what are you thinking about Esau?
You know,
hunger pain get the best off.
Right.
I wonder how bad this hunger really was.
Right.
Was it like my kids coming home? Hey, what do we have for dinner? I am starving.
Right.
I just had chips 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't be starving. Or was this where he was out hunting for days on end trying to catch an animal or kill an animal, and he was literally starving?
Well,
I don't know. Doesn't
well,
tell us.
It says Esau despised his birthright, so it made me think that he thought so little of his birthright that he let a little, something as little as just being maybe a little hungry, I don't think he was actually dying.
Right, get in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's the importance on a birthright?
He would inherit his father's wealth.
Okay.
Name and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the promises God gave
yeah.
to his father.
So I don't know how it is today in your household or your family, but as a boy growing up, my dad would always tell me, "You're the firstborn, so all the responsibility falls on you." That's what he would say. So when your mother and I get old, the rest of the family can help out, but you're the one who's the responsibility falls on. You also are the one who you're supposed to get, based on scripture like this, double blessing. In other words, you would get a double of whatever was left to the other kids. Oh, okay. So I thought that was pretty cool as a kid. But the more I get older, I'm like, wait a minute, there's more responsibility here. I'm going to have to take care of, you know, where that's not necessarily the case. And so I'm not sure how you guys were raised up, if that's the case, but a lot of times. So my grandmother is now 87, 88, and she was saying that, hey, when I die, you know, this is going to go to you, to my mom, and, you know, a quarter of my grandfather's business goes to her. And she's like, wait a minute, I didn't do anything for that. Yeah, but, you know, the firstborn passed away, her brother, so she's now the firstborn, technically, in the family. Well, I didn't do anything for that. I don't want the business. Well, that's what you're going to get. That's, you know, that's part of it. That's not necessarily always the case in family to family. But back then, in this time, this is how it was. If you were the firstborn, you're supposed to get a double blessing. As we see later on when Isaac dies, we'll see this later on, what happens and what takes place. Or before he dies, and when Jacob flees here. But Hebrews 12:6 describes Esau this way, as being a profane man. Now, I don't know if that means he was all the... When we think of the word profane today, what do you think of? You're laughing, John. What do you think of?
Profane.
Yeah. You think of someone who's constantly swearing all the time.
Self-centered.
Yeah, self-centered. Someone egotistical, you know, whatever. You're seeing that. And so I don't know if Jacob or Esau was going around constantly swearing all the time or what. But he had a heart that was not towards God. It was a heart that was for himself, despised the things that God had set up. And so we have that. He would have probably refused to admit that he was a sinner.
a sense of entitlement.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. So here's how he was. So you got this man, and then you got Jacob. So Jacob would have been more like Abraham and Isaac in his spirit, kind of trusting, just believing that God was going to send a deliverer. Now, when you think of these two men, think about this. And I don't think it throws that question up here. No, we're going to go to 27:41 here in a minute. But when you think about these two questions here, these two men, ask yourself the question, which one am I like? Now, don't answer that. I'm not asking you to answer that. But think about that along lines. In other words, so am I like Esau, profane in the way that I live my life? Or am I like Jacob, timid, wanting to do and bring honor to his parents, staying at the home, helping them, whatever, recognizing the value, trusting and deliver? We haven't heard that Jacob trusted as a deliverer yet, but those are the two contrasts that you have here. It's kind of funny that Esau was born first. Now, God controls everything, right? Since he's created Jacob and Esau, I wonder why God just didn't have Jacob come out of the womb first. I mean, these are questions I ask myself when I'm reading these things. Well, if God was going to choose Jacob to be the line that the deliverer comes through, then why didn't he just allow Jacob to come out first and get the blessing right off that? Why did he have to allow Esau to come out first?
Well, he already had told Rebekah that the younger should rule the older.
Ah, yes, God knew that. So he had a plan put in place that was going to allow the younger to become the older's leader. And the younger, or the older, was going to serve him, right?
So I just wonder if Rebekah kind of passed that along to them both as they were growing up, maybe sometime down the line, this is what God said.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yep. I would say that's very, very well possible. You know, they would have heard the story about how they were born because,
right.
I mean, it was basically a miracle from God because Rebekah couldn't have children. And their dad prayed, and all of a sudden Rebekah has two sons.
And maybe, you know, just thinking Esau was born first, but maybe that tells us, you know, you're not entitled.
Mm-hmm.
Born into that.
Ah, yeah.
It has to be something.
Yes. You have to choose to. Yep. Anything else? Also think about this. Whenever you think of Esau in the Bible, Esau is a reference. When you get to the New Testament, Esau will be a reference to the world. It talks about don't be like Esau. In other words, don't put yourself. So whenever you hear a preacher say, hey, are you an Esau, he's referring to, or are you someone who's like Esau, profane and, you know, against God in the world. Esau became very angry, right? Because he had lost the privileges of being with the firstborn. Let's read 27:41. Let's see what happens.
So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand, and I will kill my brother Jacob.
All right, we skipped a whole story in there. And by jumping over to chapter 27. In that story, you have, because of the blessing, Isaac is getting feeble in age, and he asks Esau to go shoot a specific animal that he loved to eat. And so Esau goes off and goes hunting, and he's like, Rebekah hears about this and says, you're going to bless him. Now, you need to get your dad to bless you because of what you got the birthright, right? So they put this scheme together. They slaughter a stew, and she mixes this thing up and makes it taste like what he was used to tasting. Dresses Jacob up. Remember, Esau's got all kinds of fur or hair on his body. And so they dress him up in some clothes to make him feel like he's got lots of hair on his. And Isaac's eyes aren't strong, so he couldn't see. He was kind of blind. And so Jacob brings this porridge in to his dad, or some food into his dad, and his dad feels him and he says, "Are you Esau? You sound like Jacob, but your arms and your..." And he describes all this in this story. You can read it there. And he says, "Yes, I am Esau, Dad. And here's your stew that you wanted." So Isaac eats it, and then Jacob gets blessed, steals his blessing. So now not only has he got the birthright to all that his father has first, but the blessing that was put onto the firstborn, now Jacob has as well. And so hence you get this thing where Esau hears about this and says that he finally gets it, and he comes in, "Well, I just blessed your brother Jacob." And they're both angry about this, upset. And he says, "Give me a blessing too." And he says, "I can't. It's only meant for one." He says, "But I will bless you." And he tells him this blessing here, and he reads the blessing to him. "Haven't you saved one blessing for me?" he says here in verse 36. And then Isaac said, "I have made Jacob your master, and you've declared you that all his brothers will be his servants, and I've guaranteed him an abundance of grain and wine. What is left for me to give you, my son?" Esau pleaded, "Do you not have only one blessing?" His father said, "Bless me too." And Esau broke down and wept. Finally, his father Isaac said to him, "You will live away from the richness of the earth and away from the dew of the heaven above. You will live by your sword and you will serve your brother. But when you decide to break free, you will shake his yoke from your neck." And so then you have the story that here it is from Esau hated Jacob, and he just wanted to kill him. That was it. Kind of reminds you of the curse on Cain back in we learned about, right? That almost that same wording there was used with Esau.
But would Rebekah and Isaac have to have been so deceiving? If they didn't do that, would God still have blessed Isaac?
That's a very good question. So if Jacob didn't deceive his dad, would he...
Or would he have even had more of a blessing? Sometimes I think that the choices we make, not that we're not saved or blessed or loved by God, but that we could more experience that.
If we would have made those choices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you would wonder how in the world would, if he didn't do this, he didn't lie. Now you notice Abraham lied, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you have the next generation doing the same thing, lying.
It's kind of passed down.
Exactly. And what does that tell you about sin?
That it carries
on. So, I mean, the things that I've done, that I tremble inside about what I've done in my past, I worry for my kids. All right? What are they going to experience? Is the sin going to be greater for them? Is the temptation going to be greater for them? Is the, you know, all that stuff. I question that. I wonder.
Even though they sinned and messed up, God still loved them and
exactly
carried out his promises.
Yes, and he still continued that. And that's, later on, we'll get to the verse where it says that even though the sins passed on to third and fourth generation, but God does show mercy on those who love him and keep his
commandments. But somewhere it says, and I'll have to find it if you don't know, because I always used to think about that, about the sin being passed on to the third. But it says somewhere that a generation that loves God and serves him will be passed on, it either says, to hundreds or more generations.
Yes.
So that is even greater than the sin.
Than the sin.
Pass on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's in there. I'm not sure exactly where it's at, but
it's
in there.
Yeah.
Yep. So we have this whole thing here, and he's got this hatred for his brother Jacob. Now let's see what 42 and 44 brings about.
And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away."
What do you get a picture of here between Isaac and Rebekah? Yeah, it's almost like they got their favorite children. you know, you got Isaac kind of like an Esau because he's the hunter, he's the cool guy, he's out there in the outdoors type. And you got Jacob who loves to stay around the house and help mom with the household responsibilities. So he got, you know, it's kind of like a favoritism here. So you kind of see Rebecca helping Jacob more than she does Esau. Now, I'm not saying that she doesn't love Esau, but this is the picture you get. Now, to me, that gives a picture of a house that's divided, mm-hmm. almost. It gives this impression that there are two things going on, and I don't even know what kind of household that would have looked like. When you got mom over here like in one, and dad over here like in the other, and does that create friction between the two boys automatic? Does that create friction between the husband and the wife? So you have all this, and so here it says, go on and get out of here. So here we go, and they're there, and Jacob is now going ahead back to where Rebekah came from, okay? And we have here in Genesis chapter 28, we're going to see something that takes place. 28 verse 10. It says this, meanwhile, Jacob left Beersheba and traveled toward Haran. So here's where he's at. This is actually where they're resting right now.
Okay.
And they start his journey all the way up there to Haran. That's where, so and he begins to leave, right? And, you know, it's a great distance. We figured roughly 800 miles across, pretty close from there to there. If you draw a straight line, it might not be quite 800 miles, but it's a long distance there.
Did they give an age on them at that time?
I didn't read all that in all the in-betweens. I don't know how old they were at that time. Let's see. It says older son.
Fairly up there.
That's a good question. I don't know how old he would have been. But Jacob goes out on his own. I don't think he took anybody with him because it says that he left. Now, it doesn't say that he took servants with him or anything. He left. Kind of like I'm running away. I'm getting out. I'm escaping. I'm fleeing danger.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets there. And in verse 11 it says this, that at sundown he arrived at a good place to set up camp and stop there for the night. That's a long way to go. There would have been mountainous regions in between there, so he would have had crossings, and he would have had a lot of walking. And he found a stone to rest his head against, and he lay down to sleep. Now, this is very important. You know, when you go to sleep at night, how many have ever had a dream? Everybody has, right? In the Old Testament, very often, God would use dreams. He would speak through dreams. He would speak to people through dreams. You would have I don't know what it looked like, or, you know, well, here, the Bible, it's also tell us. So, I mean, throughout that, all throughout the Bible you would have that. But in the Old Testament, it was very prevalent where they would have dreams. They would dream something. And so we have this dream that God speaks to Jacob. Let's see what the dream says. Verse 12, picking up in verse 12, let's read this. As he slept, he dreamed of a stairway that reached from earth to heaven, and he saw the angels of God going up and down the stairway. Now, let's see if I had a picture here that this somebody drew. And so you got this kind of picture. I don't know if that's what it looked like, but whoever drew the picture, that's what it looked like in their mind. They have this picture of Jacob sleeping at the end of the ladder and up and down these angels walking back and forth to the heaven. In this, if you just look at that picture, what do you think God's showing Jacob?
That there's a connection from earth to heaven.
Okay. Connection from earth to heaven. What was that? What's that connection?
The deliverer.
Aha, the deliverer, right. Yeah, so there's a connection. Through the deliverer, mankind or man can be connected to heaven. Okay? What else does it show? Angels can go back and forth. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it's being taken care of. Like there's angels watching over him.
Okay, angels watching over him. Let me give you a picture here. Let's see. The separation of God from man back in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. And all their descendants, and then we have the promise of a deliverer, and we have this picture of a God connecting man once again with him, being able to connect with him. You would have, trying to think here how to word this, you would have, you have to put yourself in Jacob's shoes. He would have heard of the story of Adam and Eve. He would have had the story of Noah and how God destroyed that. He would have heard the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. He would have had all these things where God cut off because of sin. And now here he's got this dream where, hey, I can just get up and walk up there. Let's just go up the ladder. And yet he's in a dream. Well, there's a story in here that might help us think a little bit outside the box, per se, with this. There were two very good friends who had a common enemy. This enemy was jealous as he watched the companionship between the two friends, and he was determined to destroy their friendship. In order to do this, the enemy went to one of the men and told him that his friend was plotting against him. The man was deceived by this enemy, and because he believed the lie that he had been told, he stopped any association with his former friend, thinking of Jacob and Esau, right? Even though the former friend was sad and very disappointed, he never ceased to care deeply for the man who had distanced himself from him. And so, wanting to restore the fellowship they once enjoyed, he sent his son to speak with the man who had been deceived by their enemy. The man listened to what the son had to say, and through the son, the friendship was restored. Now, when you look at this deliverer that is promised, and you get the picture of this restoration of God providing a way for man to be connected to heaven or, you know, to him. This story has more meaning than just an actual dream. And for Jacob, who is fleeing, right? He's fleeing his brother. He's fleeing his father, where there was a relationship. That's cut off. That is completely cut off. And God is showing Jacob that, hey, one day you're going to be restored. This is going to be a restoration. There's also, you got the deliverer that's coming. So even though there's separation from your parents, from all that, I'm going to restore that for you. And through this dream, God reveals this to Jacob. Now, do you think Jacob just stopped there? Do you think Jacob turned around and went back to his parents right after that? Or did he continue on? You know the story, probably. Yeah, let's see what happens. So you have that. I love that picture. I wish I could draw like that, but it's a pretty cool picture. Now 13 through 15. Someone want to read that one?
And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and the east, to the north and the south. And in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you.
What else is this saying about God? What specific characteristic does this tell us about God? Yep. So he, that God says he's going to do something, he's going to do it, right?
Right.
It's also saying that he's going to, there's quite a few things in there that he's going to be blessed with.
Mm-hmm.
One, the descendants is going to be like what? Yeah, just almost the same thing as Abraham, the stars of the sky and the sand of the sea, or sand as the sand, innumerable. So the promise is going to be, is can continue to carry on. Now, Abraham didn't see all that.
Right.
Right? He didn't know that, okay, it's going to come through Isaac. And we'll see here, I mean, not Isaac, his son Isaac, and then his grandson, Jacob. And we'll see here in a little bit when the next lesson, when we talk about Jacob's children, how quickly and how fast they multiplied. It's amazing. And how fast how it comes about. He's going to be faithful. God says what he's going to do. He's going to be faithful to carry out God's promises. Those are some of the characteristics of God. When Jacob woke up from his dream, he knew that God had given him the same promise he had given to his father, his grandfather, and now to him. 29 verse 1 says this, "Then Jacob hurried on, finally arriving in the land of the east." He takes off and he heads on to the land of the east, and he gets there. We skip all the way over these next stories.
But did God give him those promises because his dad had blessed him with it, or was that inert?
Well, that's a good question. Well, we know that God had planned for Jacob to be the one who is going to, the deliverer is going to come through, because he said that the older is going to serve him and he's going to be the one that would be blessed.
Right.
So you have, but did you, now your question though is asking a little different, right? You're wanting to know if Jacob received those blessings because of his father blessing him.
Right.
But see, God knows everything. So even before his father blessed him, he knew that was going to happen.
Right? Yes.
So he really didn't need it. Then why
go through the motions? You know, there is something about a father blessing his children. I can't put my finger on it or give you probably a 100% explanation of this, but my dad was, I'll tell you about my life, I can give you that. It's been 8 years ago. My dad was studying through the Old Testament, reading these stories again, and he came across these passages where the father would bless his children, and he would lay hands on them and say prayer, blessing, whatever it was. And so 8 years ago, my dad asked us, is it 8 years? 7 years. How old is Grant? Seven? Yes, I think he's seven. So it's been 7 years ago. Anyways, I don't remember. 7 or 8 years, doesn't matter. At my sister's wedding, we all together as a family. And my dad said, "Hey, you know, I'm studying through this. Just want to throw this out there to you guys. I've never done it with you guys, but I'd like to pray a blessing over you as a family, if you would like that." We're all sitting underneath the tree, and we drive to the tree today where we were sitting at. And we were like, he says, "So, you know, I've been doing this at the prison now. When I baptize one of the men, I ask him, would you like us as pastors to pray a blessing on? Because most of the men don't have fathers in their life." And not one of seven has ever turned it down. And we're all sitting there, and I'm like, "Yeah." He says, "Oh, okay, what would you like me to pray for?" So I just said, "Well, I would like to know what God wants me to do with my life." That's what I said. That is when I got it. So he lays his hands on me, prays. I remember him doing the same thing for Seth and my other brothers, but I remember him laying hands on me and them saying that, okay. It was 3 months later. They came to me and told me that you need to upgrade your chicken house, or you're going to lose your. We're going to stop sending chickens to you. I said, "Well, I can't do that." I looked at the numbers. There's no reason for that. So I said, "Okay, forget it. Well, we'll do without chickens. Do what we can." it was later on that April, the following April, that God laid a deep burden on my heart when we were in Brooklyn. Because I, at that time, my life was in turmoil. I was rebellious on one hand and yet wanting to do work of God. You can't do both. And so God laid a burden on my heart there in Brooklyn. And I can look back from that time of my dad praying or laying hands on me and praying that blessing that God would show me what he wants me to do with his life. I can see a pattern as I look back. I can see the things where God has changed and moved me and where I've been. And that's why I say with being licensed as a minister here, I don't know where it's going to go, but I can see that that is part of the shifting of God. So is that a blessing? Yes, in some ways. Is it the blessing like he was getting, you know, having multiple children and being descendants and being blessed with, you know, as far as from the east as from the west?
Right.
Yes and no. But I look at that and I'm like, yeah, okay, so there is something about a father laying hands. Now, if you grew up and you didn't have a father to do that with you, that doesn't mean that God can't still bless you. That doesn't mean that there's something. You have spiritual fathers. You have fathers in church. You have fathers with, you might be an uncle or a grandfather. You know, it doesn't have to be just your biological father to do that. You can still receive God's blessing without that. And we see that numerous times throughout the scriptures where people were blessed when they didn't have a dad or around. And but I can vouch for that. So I don't know if that is all directly related to that blessing that he was given to him. But I do know that God does bless him through this. So I don't know if that helps you with that, and if that's not really the answer you're looking for or not. But but it is something to really think about. And it's a challenge for me and for us as fathers. You know, to think about that with your kids. Sometimes blessing your kids is not necessarily just laying hands on them, but it's just as simple as saying, hey, I love you. You know, that can be a great blessing to our kids, you know, from time to time when we do that. All right. Any other thoughts? Questions? Okay. Let's go on. We skip over a tremendous amount of exciting story here. To get to Genesis 31. But at this point, he's got two wives now. He marries two sisters, Leah and Rachel, and that was a whole story in itself because of how he got tricked into marrying the one when he really wanted to marry Rachel. And the dad, the Rachel's father, gave Leah to him first and blamed it on saying it's tradition, you got to marry the older sister first. All he wanted Jacob to do was serve him 7 more years. He wanted to get 14 years of free labor out of his son-in-law.
Right. Basically, yeah.
That's basically what he did. So we're now all the way through here now, and we get to this story in where Jacob now leaves his father-in-law. Let's see what happens here. Genesis 31, verse 13.
I am the God of Bethel, where you poured oil on the stone marker and made a solemn vow to me. Get up, leave this land.
Okay, so these years have passed. It's 14 some years passed now. He's got some children. He's got some sons. And he is sleeping again. And an angel appears to him. And I say he's sleeping again. Maybe he's not sleeping. It just says that an angel of the Lord appears to Jacob and he tells him this. Okay, so he says that and tells him to go back to the place where he was born. So now he's got to make a trip all the way back. And he's got livestock now. He's got children. He's got a family. This is not going to be an easy journey like it might have been when he was going out because he was by himself. Okay, and he gets to travel at the same thing. So now he's got this journey going on. He's going to have 12 sons in the end as we get to it here. When you think of Jacob now, 14 years, at least 14 years later, because 7 years with Leah and 7 years with Rachel, it's at least 14 years that have gone by. Leah has 12 of the, I mean not 12, Leah has 10 of the 12 sons. Rachel was barren, kind of like his mom, and then she ended up giving birth to two sons. So we have now 12 children, and you've got 10 of them from Leah and two from Rachel. Okay, and ultimately, Rachel dies giving birth to his last son. And not in this particular passage, it's a little ways on. And as he's going back to Haran, we have in Genesis 32:28, he's on his travel, on his journey. We have the story of Jacob here wrestling with God. And at night where he begins to go into this battle. And so whenever you hear someone say, wrestle with God, this is a physical battle between Jacob and God. Okay? Was this Jesus at this time? I can't say that, the deliverer, but... or was this God? What form was this? Because it's a form of... He is a man here, and you can read the story prior to this if you want. And he's talking about this. But something takes place in this battle. And we want to read that in Genesis 32, verse 28. As he's wrestling with God.
You didn't even let me kiss my grandchildren and my daughters goodbye. You have done a foolish thing.
Yes. So, what chapter are you reading?
Oh, I'm sorry. Was that wrong?
Genesis 32:28.
Oh, I'm sorry. 32.
That's okay, because you're talking about that's the father-in-law getting mad at Jacob.
Right. Right.
Mad.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Everybody. Oh, gosh. Now I'm embarrassed.
It's okay.
32?
Yeah, it's 32:28.
Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon.
Yes. So God touched, that's why they don't touch. So God touched his hip, popped his socket out, and so he walked with a limp from then on, Jacob did. But that was during the battle. Jacob was wrestling with God and was, it's in the middle of the night, it's dark, and he's all night long wrestling. And it gets close to dawn, and you've got to think how my mind thinks. So here's God, Jacob, it's pitch black. You can't see anything, right? So you just know you're wrestling with this opponent in the middle of the dark. You ever wrestle with someone in the dark and you can't see what's going on, where the arm's coming, or the foot's... You've never done that. That's okay. I wouldn't say do that. But picture this room, pitch black, and someone coming up and attacking you, and you're wrestling with this person back and forth, and now the light comes, the daylight's coming, and you know that no man can see God, right? Or he will die. So God spares Jacob's life by knocking his socket out and making him weak. And because he had to leave. And when he does that, after he touches the socket, he says this. He says, your name will no longer be Jacob, the man told him. From now on, you will be called Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have won. Think about that. You have fought with God and with men and have won. And Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. Why do you want to know my name? The man replies. And then he blessed Jacob there. And Jacob named the place Peniel. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. It's Peniel, which means the face of God. That's what he named the place. So we have this transition now, twice in Scripture, where God changes a man's name for a specific reason. So today we have Israel, right? That name's still very prevalent in our world today. The children of Israel. So this is where the transition now takes place. I just think it's a cool story that God would come to earth if I remember correctly, I didn't read the first part of this, but I remember correctly, it's when we read the verse where it said that he... the place where he returned, where he placed oil in the ground? Mm-hmm. Isn't that where the reminder was?
Mm-hmm.
At the reminder it says, I'm the God who appeared at you at Bethel, where you placed oil on the pillar of stone, and you made a vow to me. That's where he's talking about that who he made his vow to. It's not where he was at when he fought the battle. I thought that would have been kind of cool if it was. Because the stairway coming out of heaven. That's not it. But if you think about that, that Jacob wrestles with God. He has his hip knocked out. I don't know if I'd want to do that, but if you could ever physically wrestle with God and have a reminder for the rest of your life that you fought with God or you wrestled with God, every time you took a step caused you pain.
Did he know that? Or he just... says a man, he was wrestling a man, I guess, or...
But then he said later that...
Yeah, right afterwards he said, well, let me tell me your name, and he didn't know...
Because he said he seen God face to face. That's why that was the meaning of the name that he gave the place.
Jacob, because
so
he said you wrestled with God.
That.
Yeah. Yep.
Because
he
was
said...
the lesson or the reason that God physically wrestled with him?
Oh, well, we didn't talk about that at the beginning of the story. It doesn't say that, does it? Is Jacob left camp alone in verse 24, and a man came and wrestled with him until dawn began to break.
Right.
When the man saw that he could not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of its socket.
And see, that just is like, what do you mean you couldn't win the match? Like, how could that be?
Look, yeah.
Yeah, I struggle with that sometimes myself because maybe I shouldn't say this because we're being recorded it, and I don't want to ever come back and bite me. But
you can say it after turn it off.
I sometimes don't think we as human beings here on this earth realize how much power we really have. What I mean by that, I'm not talking about necessarily just physical power or strength or God has, we are created in God's image. And if a sniper can sit on a boat for 24 hours climbing the waves up and down to make one key shot, looking through a scope, giving up food, bathroom breaks, water, just to make one important shot to free hundreds of people. The mental capacity that takes to do that, mankind has been gifted with an ability by God. God is the creator, we can never outmatch God. But God has given a gift to mankind that allows us to go beyond what we think we can really do. And in Jacob's case here, let me shut this off real quick, because I don't want to spoil anything for anybody else. And our lesson is pretty much done. We have one more verse to read, but...